Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, April 30th. I'm Alan Chartok. Get to your phones now. Call 1-800-348-2551. The rarest of all doctors, a dermatologist, is with us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, welcoming Ramirez Awad, the Saratoga Hospital Medical Group, ear and sinus surgery practice located in the Wilton campus, saratogahospital.org. For more information, joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Joseph Schwartz. He is board-certified dermatologist with his own practice in Troy and Clifton Park. He's here to answer your questions, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Schwartz, your calls and much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us to discuss skincare and treatment is Dr. Joseph Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz is a board-certified dermatologist in Troy and Clifton Park, where he practices both medical and cosmetic dermatology. Dr. Schwartz earned his medical degree at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. He completed his internship and residency in internal medicine at Mount Sinai Medical Center. He also completed a fellowship in skin cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Schwartz, welcome back to Medical Monday.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Well, it's great to see you. You're the rarest of all rare doctors, a dermatologist, at a time when there is a serious lack of them.
Well, I'd like to say we're special, maybe not rare, but we're special. There's definitely a lack of manpower, but good dermatology can be practiced by primary care doctors as well, and it's important that they get involved in that because there aren't really enough dermatologists to handle all the skin problems. But it's changed a lot. When I first started out in the late 90s, dermatologists, including myself, we would see a lot of acne. Sort of common, you know, teenage acne. We don't see that anymore. We see very severe cases. So that's a good example of what primary care doctors are handling it. Pediatricians, family practitioners are really able to handle the routine acne and allows the dermatologist to handle more difficult cases.
Better meds for acne?
Not really better meds. Just learning how to use the ones. There are some new medications, but it's really just getting out there and doing it. It's not that hard to treat acne for, you know, routine cases in teenagers. And, you know, we're there to help them when they need it, when things don't work out well. But that's a good example of how primary care doctors can handle, skin conditions that are serious and then, again, allow the specialist to handle the tougher cases.
Okay, if it's all right with you, doctor, let's go and get the first call from Dawn of Delmar. All right, Dawn of Delmar, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. So about a month ago, I started to develop this itching intermittently on the inner part of my arms. I had stayed in a hotel, so I thought maybe it was like bed bugs because there were two, like, very, very tiny, I'll call it a puncture wound, I don't know, you know. Anyway, it's continued periodically. At the past couple of weeks, and I did try a cortisone ointment, which a pharmacist recommended. I thought maybe it was. I did a self-diagnosis of brachioradial pruritus.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's what it sounds like to you, or if you would have some other ideas, or if I need to see somebody.
Well, as you know, I can't diagnose you without having seen you and getting a full history and physical exam. But what you mentioned is an interesting diagnosis. It's sort of analogous to a condition like sciatica, which affects the nerves in the lower back. It radiates down the legs. Well, with brachial radial pruritus, it affects the upper extremities, but it is a symptom of a nerve impingement. And people will have arthritis in the neck usually, or maybe some spasm in the area. So if you were to, say, have arthritis in your back and neck, then it would be something that you might experience. But there are many things that can cause itching in the arms. If you do have, again, if you have a history of arthritis, it might be something that's worth exploring.
She raises an interesting, Dawn raises an interesting point, though, which is what I would call SDS. Not the old left-wing group, but self-diagnosis stinks. I mean, we can drive ourselves crazy looking this stuff up on the web, can't we?
Certainly can. I mean, sometimes it's very valuable. Sometimes it could be reassuring to find out what you do have or make a diagnosis, but other times you'll just run into all kinds of scary things and get yourself all stressed out.
Because that does fit me. I do have arthritis in my neck. And so I'm wondering, should I see my primary care doctor?
I would always start with your primary care doctor. Get a good examination, a basic neurological exam, make sure there's nothing obvious going on. The good news about that condition, it usually does disappear over time, or it's self-limited, I've found. But it's sort of a diagnosis of exclusion. If there's no obvious rash or other cause for it, you can blame it on that. And it typically doesn't respond to topical corticosteroids because it's not really an inflammation on the skin. It's more of an irritation on the nerves. So, yeah, I would definitely be evaluated for that.
Dawn, thank you.
Thank you, Dawn.
Okay, let's go to our old friend Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, you're on.
What parasites are likely to cause skin nodules or eruptions?
Well, in this country and where we live, the most common thing is scabies. It's a very common parasitic infestation. It's been around for thousands of years, apparently, and it's still hard to eradicate. We see patients all the time, and it doesn't spare any socioeconomic class. It can affect everyone and anyone. And it's often difficult to diagnose because by the time it's obvious, it can have been present for many months and spread to other people.
What does it look like, Doc?
Well, with a keen eye, you can see burrows, which would be the primary lesion of the skin. They're little lines that would occur between the fingers or wrists, but they're very subtle and often hard to see because people are so itchy from scabies that they're just scratching and excoriating their skin. And when it's been there long enough, you see sort of a generalized allergic type reaction. People can get just redness and bumps all over. So it takes a keen eye, and it's something I may have seen patients who were suffering with this for months, if not years, before they were properly diagnosed. So it's an age-old disease that's still very difficult.
Jim from Matamoros, thank you. Okay, over to now Susan in Stamford, New York. Stamford, New York, number 3. Go ahead, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm just wondering about rosacea, if you could give me any information about that. I had been diagnosed in November with that and given an ointment called metronidazole, and it finally is clearing it up. It's almost gone now, but I was wondering, I don't know why it started, and I was wondering if you could kind of tell me about that. I had taken turmeric, 500 milligrams of turmeric every day for like the month before, and I was wondering if it could be a reaction to that.
I've been wondering about rosacea myself. It's one of those conditions where we still don't know the exact cause or etiology, and it's fairly common. We know there's some genetics involved. It's more common in people of Celtic background, fair skin, but anybody can get it. It's one of the inflammatory conditions of the skin. There are probably different things that trigger it in different people, whether it be foods or bacteria or other common organisms on the skin. And we talked about scabies. There's a mite called Demodex, which resides in people's pores, and some people may be reactive to that. So it's probably not one simple thing. But as you mentioned, there are good treatments, one of which you're using, which is the metronidazole. And that's a simple topical antibiotic, which exactly how it works is unknown, but it does usually reduce the inflammation of rosacea. And with rosacea, you see red bumps, sort of pimple-like bumps on the face, usually middle of the face, forehead, nose, cheeks, chin, usually in middle-aged people. And in men in particular, they can get chronic inflammation and enlargement of the nose is called rhinophyma, the old W.C. Fields, which is associated with alcohol, but that's really not probably a proper association.
What do you mean the W.C. Fields?
Didn't he have the big nose?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He did. Right.
And that's rhinophyma. It's a variant of rosacea, and it's really not due to alcohol. Although alcohol can make you flushed and red, but it doesn't cause enlargement of the nose.
Thank you, Susan. But not roseola. My kid had roseola when he was little kid, and we all thought he had measles, but he didn't, you know.
Childhood exanthems.
There we go. Okay, now we're going to go to, let's see here, Bob in Holland Patent, a name that I've always loved, Holland Patent. You're on, Bob.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Doctor. I have, for some time, a number of years, had a sore that started under the hairline, the sideburn. And it started in one place, right about where the bone is, on the side, the upper cheekbone, I guess you'd call it. And it spread down a ways, and my general practitioner recommended some time ago that he could cut it out. You know, just they tried freezing it, and they got rid of the smaller ones.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't get rid of that. And I guess that was headquarters for it, where it had begun sooner. And since I have used hydrogen peroxide as of about the first of the year. And I've cleared all of it up except for the headquarters of it.
Right.
And that's lessening in size.
Okay, hey, Bob. Bob, we're up against a break, so let the doc answer. Go ahead, Doc.
So I'm not exactly sure what you have, but one common thing is actinic keratoses, and you can get multiple of these red scaly spots on the face. And some people think, you know, if you put cream on them or moisturizer, it makes it get better, but really what you're doing is just removing some of the scale on top. So you should definitely get that checked. It sounds like you've been to a doctor. Usually you can remove those without having to cut them out because they're not deep. These are the earliest stage of skin cancer, and when it's not deep, you don't want to go deep.
And what's it called again, Doctor?
Actinic keratosis.
Okay.
So, of course, that we don't know exactly if you have that. But that's the most common thing that I see in folks who have sun-damaged skin. It's really the most common lesion. Red scaly spots on the face or hands or chest.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. And very quickly, before we got a break, Doctor, the one thing, Joe, we want to really know is this is probably smart to stay out of the sun, right?
Well, we want to go outside and enjoy the wonderful weather. I implore all of you, when it's 80 in 2 days, don't go outside and soak up the sun for 2 hours. I've already had my first sunburn victim of the year who was sitting out a couple of days. Was it last week when it was nice and sunny? Last Sunday, I think it was. Sunday before. Nice sunburn on the head. So I know we get all excited when the sun is out and it's the first nice day, but be careful. Especially at the beginning of the summer, you're most prone to get a sunburn because your skin is not adapted at all to the sun.
So anyway, we're talking to Dr. Joseph Schwartz. We will be back in a moment or two. Just a few seconds. Hold in there.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. New York Oncology Hematology welcoming WAMC listeners to its 5th Annual Spring to Life Conference, Saturday, May 19th, CME credit available for healthcare professionals. NewYorkOncology.com for registration. Nathan Litauer Hospital welcoming Dr. Jerome Rosenstein to their Gloversville location. Dr. Rosenstein has 25 years of experience in obstetrics and gynecology, specializing in vaginal surgeries, cervical pathology, and high-risk obstetrics. NLH.org. Merit Bookstore Millbrook, an independent book and toy store in Millbrook, hosting Jim DeFelice, a talk.
And we are back with dermatologist Dr. Joseph Schwartz, who, as you can see, knows his stuff. Here's a couple, Doc, that have just come in over the internet at WAMC, at voxpop at WAMC.org. Hello, is blepharitis and demodex mites a dermatological issue? If not, who? Ophthalmological? Is blepharitis curable or only manageable?
So that would be a condition that could fit into the purview of either a dermatologist or an ophthalmologist. What blepharitis refers to is inflammation of the area of on the eyelid where the eyelashes are. So it's sort of the transition from the regular skin on the face to the eye conjunctival skin in the eye. And it's a common area to get inflammation. And it, going back to the rosacea discussion, you can get ocular rosacea, which affects that particular that area. And that's an area where you can see other, you know, things like styes and chalazions. So that can be a manifestation of rosacea. So oftentimes, if there's a lot of eye inflammation, we would want to work with an ophthalmologist to make sure that there's nothing else going on. But the answer to the question would be both eye and skin doctors would be helpful in that regard. Huh.
Okay, hello. I'm someone who's blushed for years at the drop of a hat. I accept that about myself, but all these years of blushing seems to have left me with a skin that is reddish overall. Is there any solution?
Well, possibly. People who flush and blush a lot after many years, sometimes the blood vessels in the face don't constrict anymore, so you'll see these visible red lines on the skin. And if that's the case, they can be possibly destroyed or sealed with a laser procedure. Again, I would have to sort of do the evaluation, but there is treatment for that. So I would say it's worth looking into if it's a real bothersome condition.
And Sarah wants to know, I would love to hear how the doctor feels about dermatologists focusing more on cosmetic type issues rather than true dermatological illness. I ask this because I have had the experience of having to wait a significant amount of time to get an appointment to have a skin lesion looked at. But if I wanted to get an appointment for a facial peel, I could be seen by the same doctor a week later. Seems to be a preference by someone, not all dermatologists, to have a more private pay practice than focuses on cosmetic needs rather than deal with insurance.
Well, yeah, I think that some of those points are true, what you just read. Obviously, people, you know, who have the right to do what they want to do with their medical licenses and their training. As you mentioned early on, there is a shortage of dermatologists, and I'm kind of disappointed when a lot of my colleagues move away from treating medical conditions to just do cosmetic conditions. There's certainly a need for the medical dermatologist to be out there treating patients. I like to say I didn't go to medical school to treat wrinkles, but there are people out there who are very bothered by those cosmetic things, so I don't want to poo-poo it too much or belittle it. But I am always a little disappointed when you know, people give up sort of their training in medical dermatologists to just do cosmetic procedures.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, Dr. Every time I look in the mirror, I understand more. let's go to Donna in Albany. Donna, you're on.
Hello, doctor.
Hi.
I have two sebaceous growths on my face, and I'm wondering if they can be removed.
And while we're at it, doctor, tell us what a sebaceous growth is.
Well, let's assume the most common thing we see is something called sebaceous hyperplasia. There are yellow bumps on the cheeks, and if you look really closely, you'll see little lobules. And basically, it's an enlarged cluster of sebaceous glands. And again, these are quite common. The way I treat them usually is just to gently burn them to flatten them. It's a simple procedure and takes a few seconds.
What do you burn them with?
We use an electric surgery needle. It's a little stingy, but you can do it without anesthesia. So again, I don't know if that's what you have, but it's a common thing to talk about. And if that is the case, it's pretty easy to remedy.
Okay, thank you, Donna. Let's go to Cynthia in Northampton, Massachusetts. Come on, Cynthia, you're on.
Thank you very much for taking the call. Yes, doctor, I'm a 58-year-old, just finished treatment and cured, I think, from shingles, unfortunately. That was rough. But now I've developed these sort of quarter-sized lesions on the leg. Is that something common that happens after shingles?
So where were your shingles exactly?
They were on the back and on the front.
Okay, so for people out there, shingles is another term for herpes zoster, which is a later manifestation of the chickenpox virus, which is dormant and comes out onto the skin many years later, usually, and causes a rash. Interestingly, it's in a dermatomal distribution, which is in a nerve distribution. The virus resides in the nerve root and spreads out, and so it spreads out over the nerve, so it's really a pretty interesting thing. But unfortunately, with shingles, the inflammation of the condition causes a lot of damage to the nerves. So you can get a chronic postherpetic neuralgia, which can be severe and debilitating. But typically that would be in the area of the rash. So if you had a rash on your part of your face or an arm or an area on the side of your back, the pain would be in the area where you had the nerve damage. So if you had shingles on your back and you have something on your leg, that really wouldn't probably be related.
Okay, so does your immune system weaken, though, after shingles? I'm thinking it could be that.
Not really. You know, people talk about the immune system weakening and strengthening. It's very complicated. But all you can say is when you've had shingles, it's unlikely that you'll get them again.
Or that you'll ever forget them.
Them, indeed. It's terrible. And I do recommend for folks out there who can get there's a new shingles vaccine.
Right.
It's a recombinant vaccine. It's highly effective, probably over 90% in preventing shingles. It's two injections, and I think it's indicated for patients over 50, people over 50. And it's much better than the old shingles vaccine, which was very minimally effective, maybe 50%. I had lots of patients who came in after having shingles who would after having the shingles vaccine, the old one, who developed shingles, and severe cases too. So the new vaccine is where it's at. I would recommend getting it. I'm scheduled to get mine.
And where can you get them? Can you get them in drugstore the same way?
You can, yes. You can go to the pharmacy and get it just from the drugstore or your doctor. It's very easy to get. And oftentimes it's free with insurance.
Interesting. Thank you very much. All right. That was Cynthia. And now we find ourselves going to Jack in Del Mar. All right, Jack in Del Mar, you're up.
Hi, a quick question for you. I'm in my late 50s. Over the last, 15 years or so, I've developed some bumps on my feet and lower legs. I have a doctor friend. He said it was, I'm not going to get this right, keratinosis or something. I'm wondering if there's any cure. Is it dietary adjustment? Or is it a way to stop it from advancing up my legs? It's coming up by my thighs. And it's an inconvenience, but it's a pain in the neck. What do I do?
Yeah. Well, there is a common condition. It is called a keratosis. And on the legs, they often look like little corn chips. I don't know if that's your case. They're little white, sort of dry flakes of skin. And they commonly occur on the foot, and they can spread up. They're not serious. They don't turn into anything. It's more of a cosmetic thing. If they're not too bad, you can treat them with a moisturizer to try to soften it and remove some of the excess scale. But if they're thicker, then you probably need to have them scraped or frozen off. We do a lot of freezing in the office with liquid nitrogen. The other common thing is warts. People can have a lot of warts on their feet and legs. Those are viral, as opposed to the previous thing we mentioned, which we don't really know what causes them, but there's really no virus involved. If it's spreading, you may want to get it looked into. Warts can be a little tougher to get rid of and can spread to other parts of the body like your face, so you may want to get that checked.
Thank you, Jack from Del Mar. All right, now we're going to go to, of all places, Woodstock and to Steve. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Dr. Schwartz. Hi, Dr. Shartok. I'm calling regarding the scabies and the cream, the Permethrin. I can't pronounce it. You can.
Permethrin.
Permethrin cream that you use to treat that. As you know, it's maddening that under, literally the skin crawling, how many times do you need to apply that? I seem to have it come back and go away with the cream and then come back again. Is that normal or is that abnormal?
Okay. So a typical treatment The first thing is, it's important to really get a proper diagnosis. And a lot of times people will come in with what they think is scabies, and it's not. And they'll come in with something that they think is not scabies, and it is. So the best way to diagnose is to actually do a scraping and to see. You can see the little parasites, the mites under the microscope. So that's number one. Assuming you do have that, or one does have that, the treatment is to use this cream permethrin, apply it overnight, and then repeat it in a week. And that's the standard treatment. If that's done properly, the cure rate is quite high, and it should be sufficient. A lot of times when people think they keep getting scabies back again, it's not scabies, it's something else. So you can't keep using the cream. It's basically, a poison to treat the mites. It's not something you want to put on all the time. Other thing, people who do have scabies, it's been proven they've been treated. Because it's an allergic reaction, sort of similar to a bug bite, you can still be itchy for several weeks afterwards. It doesn't mean you're still infested with scabies.
Okay.
So there's
a revisit to the doctor to if I'm still experiencing that after several weeks to have them further investigate. Yes?
Yeah, you don't want to keep using that. It may not be necessary, okay. And it may not be good for you. And frequently, okay. You know, when people get scabies, it's like psychologically it can get tough on people. They worry about having an infestation. There's some stigma involved. They think because they think it's associated with poor hygiene or whatever, but and a lot of times people worry they're going to get reinfested. But so don't keep using it. If you did the treatment properly, it should be sufficient, and you should get rechecked if they're still itchy.
Thank you, Steve. Okay. And now we're going to go, let's see here, to Jamie in Goshen, New York. Jamie in Goshen, you're on.
Hi. So I have a 2-year-old daughter, and a couple weeks ago she woke up with hives every single morning of the week. And they were pretty big, and they were in random parts of her body, and they would go away within like 45 minutes. And they would come back after she took a nap in the afternoon. So it seems like when she was sleeping, they would develop, and then when she woke up, they would fade away. And when I took her to the doctor kind of was like, well, it could be absolutely anything, so we're not sure. But I was just curious if you had any insight as to what it might be.
So, first of all, hives are a very common rash. And the hallmark is that you get these welts that are transient. So they will be there for less than a day, typically several hours. And while they're there, they're extremely red and itchy. Most of us have experienced hives at one point in our lives. It's quite common. Now, in a young 2-year-old, to get them, it's a little of a concern. Kids are being exposed to lots of new foods and things, and you certainly want to be concerned about a food allergy. If it persists, I would talk to the pediatrician about maybe seeing an allergist. I think it'd be smart at that age to nip it in the bud, to see if there's maybe some testing that can be done to look for an allergy. In the meanwhile, you want to possibly treat with antihistamines to help alleviate the symptoms, but I would get on top of that with the pediatrician and maybe look into an allergist.
Thank you,
to
Jamie.
Further evaluate.
Thanks, Jamie. Okay, so now that leaves us with Emily in Delmar. All right, Emily, let's go to line number 4 for you. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if you could recommend any over-the-counter help with creepy skin and age spots.
Okay. So when people talk about age spots, usually it's really sun damage that it is. So I think you have to recognize really what the problem is. And if it is from the sun, then you have to really be strict about your sun protection. If these spots are in areas of sun exposure, then they probably are from the sun and not just age spots. So if they're on the top of your hands or forearms or face or neck or the V area of the neck, then these are not age spots, they're sunspots.
And what's the difference to those of us who worry about things?
Again, you're not going to get better if you just put moisturizer on. You have to, the answer is sun protection. There may be some treatments that can improve it. But by calling it an age spot, again, it moves away from the actual cause, which is sun damage.
Are we talking about precancerous here?
Possibly. So the sequelae of that is possibly skin cancer. One thing that I like to tell people to do, but don't do this if you're driving, is if you roll up your sleeve and you look at your arm, your forearm, and then look at the inside of your arm, you could see what's pretty much sun damaged skin, which would be on the outside, this exposed area, and look at the skin on the inside, which is typically very white and not full of blotches, wrinkles, or any other marks. That gives you the idea of what your skin would look like if it wasn't sun exposed or sun damaged. So again, most of what we call age spots are really sunspots. So you have to really use good strict sun protection. And moisturizer can be helpful, but we're really talking about sunscreen. And there are cosmetic procedures which can be employed as well.
Okay, thank you, Emily. We're going to have to take a break now, everybody. But we'll be back to Susan and Derek and Carrie and Aaron. But it'll take a few seconds. And we're talking about seconds here, folks. Don't get me wrong.
Support comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health, Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives, adirondackhealth.org. Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York. An inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center providing healing focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addictions. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Act Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder, and medical treatment for alcohol problems. ActSmartNewYork.com. Travels with Sarah, organizing private African safaris with authentic tented camps and lodges, accompanied by Africa specialist Sarah Kearns. 845-926-4774 for more information. And from Studio KTM Salon Red Hook, specializing in all phases of cut and organic color, from corrective to fashion by stylist Kristen Marquette. StudioKTM.com.
And we are back with Dr. Joseph Schwartz, a dermatologist and a very good one. Todd writes, Doctor, I had a cutaneous horn removed from my arm, which was cancerous. Am I more susceptible to getting this again? Also, if my arms get much sun, I get this itchy red bumps. Is that a sun allergy?
Okay, so there's a couple of questions there. A cutaneous horn is a descriptive term, really. It's not a diagnosis, but it looks like what you imagine, like a wart, a horny wart on the skin. And usually it's due to a actual viral wart or a skin cancer that's forming. And once you have a skin cancer, you're certainly more prone to more. In order to have skin cancer, you typically need to get sun damage that will generate that type of problem, and it's usually not confined to one spot. So if you have it on your arm, it's not just that arm that's susceptible. It'll be probably your face and other arm as well. Mm. The other question about the red dots on the arms, there are several things that can cause itching with sun exposure. And there are photodermatoses, which are rashes that are caused by sun exposure. So I have to know more about it. But what we'd probably want to do is to try to cover up and avoid the sun. Some of these rashes are preventable with sunscreen, others not so much, that the spectrum that's blocked by sunblock may not be sufficient to stop the rash. So even some of the close to visible light may actually trigger some rashes on people's skin. So that can be a big problem.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to... let's see here. 8 6 16. Kerry in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Kerry, you're on.
Good afternoon. To start, my mom was diagnosed with melanoma quite a few years ago. And since I'm outside quite a bit and with my mom's history, annually I'll see the same doctor that she sees for a total skin screening. Actually, I see him tomorrow. But 3 months ago, I saw him, and he noticed on my left forearm rather a growth that he said was kind of irregular, and he had some concern about that. And he had his assistant take a picture of it, and I was quite surprised that there wasn't a biopsy taken. And like I said, it's been 3 months since I've seen him. It seems like quite a bit of time. I was just wondering, is that a normal procedure?
Well, since you're coming back, that's acceptable. It doesn't sometimes make sense to take a picture of something and then, you know, come back as neither in 2 years, because if there is something bad, it's just going to develop. But to take a picture then recheck in 3 months certainly wouldn't be unusual. If you're worried about it, you could express your concern. I'm sure that wouldn't be too big a deal maybe to get a biopsy, particularly with your family history and all. But I'll leave that up to the clinical judgment of your doctor. Pictures can be helpful, because one of the key things, you know, we like to talk about what to look for with skin cancer, but to put it simply, the most important signs of melanoma are any new brown mole or funny-looking brown spot on the skin, or a mole that's changing would be suspicious, particularly in people who are over 40.
Do they itch?
Itching. No, it doesn't itch, no.
Yeah, and the melanomas are usually not symptomatic. Sometimes there's itching, which could be a sign of some inflammation, but you can't really go by that. So taking a picture and then checking it again in 3 months can be very useful. If there's absolutely no change, it's unlikely or less likely that there is a skin cancer brewing. So it can be helpful to do photographs. But again, only if there's going to be follow-up. To take a picture and then not have a follow-up doesn't really make too much sense.
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to be seeing him tomorrow. So
sounds
okay.
Good.
Good luck, Kerry. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now we go all the way over to Aaron in Niskayuna. Aaron, it's your turn.
Hi, Dr. Flores. Thanks for taking the call. But last October, I had a heart attack and had a stent put in, and I'm on multiple medications. And recently, I've got itching problem on my back, on my sides, my upper arms, my shoulders. And I'm thinking that maybe there's a medication reaction, or my doctor thought it was just the dry skin over the, you know, rough winters that we've had. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
It's common to get dry skin itching in the winter. So that certainly could be the case. A lot of times when people have a rash, because it's something they can see and they dwell on it, they try to attribute it to something, and sometimes it's useful and you could provide good information to your doctor. That's why histories can be really valuable. But it's hard to always sort of connect one thing to another. And having a cardiac stent procedure wouldn't typically cause a rash, but then again, you have to think about medications. Whenever there's a rash that's unusual, or the timing is associated with a new medicine, you certainly have to think about that. And drug rashes or drug eruptions, which is what we like to call them, can look like many different things. There are some classic patterns, but any itching or unusual rash with a new onset, certainly something you have to think about. So definitely go over that with your doctor and see if that makes sense. There are certain medications that are critical, and you don't want to just willy-nilly stop them. And there may be options and alternatives that you might want to do. But it's very tough. And we have patients, you know, that are on a half a dozen or more medications, and they're on them for a good reason usually. And if they're not, that's a good time to stop them when they have a rash. But it's tough. And you can get a reaction to a medication you've been on for a long time, too. It's not always the new guy that causes the problem.
Thank you, Aaron. Let's go to Susan in Pottown in Poughkeepsie. Susan, you're on.
Hi there. I have a real quick comment. My dad is 90 years old now, and he was in the study for the systemic cure for melanoma 2 years ago. And he's cancer-free. He's been well ever since they started the treatment.
That's wonderful.
So it's great news. Yeah. Also, that was at Yale New Haven. I had got shingles over 3 years ago in my eye. I've been on the Valtrex for 3 years now, and I have always recurring flare-ups in my eye, so I've been on eye drops forever. But I'm wondering, am I a candidate for the shingles vaccine. I did have the other vaccine. And after I got that, I got a flare-up. So I wonder.
So do you see an eye doctor, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Great ophthalmologist.
So I'm not sure why you're still on that drug. People who, one condition where you might be on, the Valtrex is an antiviral for treats herpes infections, which are shingles and herpes simplex. But people can get herpes in the eye, and that would you would more likely be on Valtrex for that because you'd want to prevent it from coming back again. Shingles can come back, but typically not right away, whereas herpetic infections can frequently recur, whether they're on the lip or the genitalia.
You're right.
So that would be a serious thing, and particularly in the eye. Herpes can affect the eye and cause a lot of damage to the cornea.
Yeah.
So that could be one situation. But I think anybody of proper age would certainly be a candidate for the new shingles vaccine. I would recommend it.
Thank you, Susan. Let's go to Derek in Albany. Derek in Albany, line number two in play. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
I had a quick question. I had a quick question about seborrheic dermatitis. I've been diagnosed many years ago, but still get flare-ups every once in a while. Is there any new research out there to prevent that?
Well, no cures. I don't think there's a lot of research either, for that matter. Probably because seborrhea is more of a nuisance disease than, you know, a super serious one. Although in some people it can be quite severe. Seborrhea typically, well, one manifestation, the most common one would be dandruff. That's sort of a scalp manifestation. But you can get rashes on the face that are usually red along the sides of the cheeks and nose. So it can be annoying, but usually is controlled with shampoos and cortisone creams and a few other things. So I don't think there's a lot of new research into that just because it's not a major health issue. But it can overlap with psoriasis, and those people who have the overlap with psoriasis, certainly lots of new treatments for psoriasis.
Thank you for that. Okay, let's go to
yeah, such okay. Choice.
Let's go to Charlie in Worthington. I try to take them, Doc, in order. Charlie in Worthington. Okay, Charlie, you're on.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call. I just had a couple of quick follow-up questions on shingles.
Yep.
First, on the new medicine available, I had avoided the previous one because I'm on Humira, and I was advised not to. Is there any difference in this new medication?
Yes. So the old vaccine was considered a live attenuated virus.
Right.
And people who are on Humira is a biologic for psoriasis. So
exactly.
It can affect your immune system and all the biologic drugs. For many conditions, have a warning not to take any live viruses with the concern that it might become more of a serious problem. So what I would say is with the new drug, the reason that the new virus, the reason that it's so fantastic is that it's a recombinant vaccine, so it's not live at all, sort of like the hepatitis vaccine. And it's certainly safe to use for patients who are on drugs like Humira.
Thank you, Charlie. All right, now we're going to go to Susan in her car. Susan in your car, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I heard the doctor say just before that if you get a new spot, you should have it looked into, and I did. I saw it manifest on my skin, and it's just a small spot. It is very cylindrical, so it's round. It's not jagged. But I wanted to know, I have an appointment scheduled for August. Is there a reason I should try to go more quickly than that?
That is a good question. So have you been to the dermatologist before?
Not really. I do have some spots on my skin, and my father has skin cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have an appointment coming up.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to comment on, but I'll comment on something.
Okay.
Patients that I see every year, who I get to know their health conditions and their skin, I can usually recommend and advise them that if they come back in a year, nothing really bad is going to happen. If they get a growth, it should be something that we can handle. Now, there's always weird things that grow fast, of course. But the truth is that melanomas, they tend to actually evolve slowly. So if you see somebody and they're perfectly fine and they come back in a year, if there's something there, usually it's easily curable or early stage. So, again, in your case, I don't know whether you've had a baseline exam or where you are with that. But that's why I think it's important for people who want to get their skin checked, particularly those at high risk, so family history of skin cancer, a fair skin, any history of skin cancer. For people who come in once a year, it's pretty much a safe approach. Now, if they have active lesions, they're developing skin cancers or precancerous spots, then they may have to be seen sooner. But if it's just having their moles checked, if you're looked at and everything looks good, you're pretty much good to go for a year. So a year is a good interval. Once it gets to 2 years, I'm not going to promise that, because things can develop over 2 years, which can be more severe.
Thank you, Susan. We'll go to Debbie in Ankrum. All right, Debbie in Ankrum, you're on.
Hi. My daughter was recently diagnosed with Wells syndrome, and I'm wondering if you could explain what that is. We've been having a hard time finding much on the internet about it.
So what are her symptoms?
She gets lesions that almost look like cellulitis that grow from a small pimple to a very large, very hot spot within hours. She will get 5 or 6 of them, like mm-hmm. on her leg, on her arm, on her face, and then within days they disappear, and it'll be gone for a couple of months, and then they come back again.
Yeah, so Wells syndrome is one of the eosinophilic syndromes. They're not common. And have you seen a specialist? Who have you seen?
She has an appointment to see a dermatologist next week.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those. First of all, with any kind of situation, you want to make sure that there's a proper diagnosis, which may include special tests, blood tests, skin biopsy. And that's number one. And then once you're confident as to what it is, then you can look into some therapies. Now, with rare diseases or uncommon things, there may not be one best treatment. And I think it's useful in a situation like you may be experiencing. It's good to read about that because, again, you can learn and educate yourself and go in with some good questions to ask the doctor. I'm hoping I'm answering your question. But basically, you have to sort of go through the procedures. It's not a common condition, so you want to make sure that the diagnosis is correct.
Thank you, Debbie. Okay, Catherine in Albany. Catherine, this is going to have to be fast because we're running out of time here. Go ahead, Catherine.
Thank you, Doctor, for the call. I've had this, it started out the size of a quarter, red, just flat, and then it grew into about 3 50-cent pieces within a matter of a year. Looks like a bullseye rash. It's not Lyme disease. The dermatologist tested me. She mentioned something about it could be granular something, but I have not had a biopsy yet.
Okay. Well, there's a condition. So I'm glad that you went to a dermatologist, number one. Hopefully you can get a good answer. But there is a condition called granuloma annulare, which is quite common. It's a condition which causes circular rashes on the skin, usually on the arms and legs. And they're not scaly. They're under the skin. It could be what you have.
Right.
If you're not sure what it is, you can discuss with the dermatologist getting a skin biopsy, and that would give you a definitive answer if that's the diagnosis.
Could it spread to my face, those rats, whatever it is?
It's not common on the face, but it's possible.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We'll try to get a fast one in here. Let's go to Tom in North Adams. Tom, this has to be very, very quick. Go ahead. What do you got?
When I was a kid, I was had a skin biopsy, and when that happened, this is maybe 40 years ago, a mole has grown. And it's a pretty sizable mole. I'm just wondering what caused that and preventing
it. Okay, very quickly, Doc.
Well, a biopsy wouldn't cause a mole to grow. You could have a scar there, and that's not unusual that you can develop a scar from a biopsy. So I would be... I would be careful about certainly going, getting it cut out by someone who may not be sure what they're looking at, because if it is a scar and you remove it, it'll just create a bigger scar. But biopsies won't cause a mole to form. There again, you can get possibly some other things, but the most common thing would just be a scar from at the site.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks You're very welcome. Much. We are just out of time. I wanted to thank Susan from Pittsfield and Jim from Springfield. They both had questions to ask you, Doctor, but maybe next time.
You'll have to have me back.
That's right. And it'll be a delight to do that. I want to thank everyone who called in. Support for Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute, with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks again for joining us, everybody, on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowicz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a little music and a news update.